Hey, and welcome to another episode of Movie Mastery. It's the podcast where we watch the movies you recommend, and I am your host, John. Over there is the other host, Jeff.
That's me.
And this week, we've got a super special treat. Much like when we did the Chipmunk Adventure, this was not exactly one that was on the list, but one that I absolutely wanted to do.
Yeah, I had not heard of this. I'm really excited that you brought it to my attention, so I can't wait to get into it myself. I mean, granted, that's because we've dropped format and we already watched the damn thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Also, finding a preview for this would have been, what, impossible?
Yes. I mean, there really wasn't much of a preview. Like, okay, we watched the Elf movie.
Yeah, the Elf movie. And I know there's more than one Elf movie. We watched the one called the Elf movie.
Yeah, all now, right? this one was... Because there was another one that was done, like... 6 years after the show ended.
Yeah, and it's just called, like, Project Elf or something.
Yeah, Project Elf Way, where he gets a bunch of clothes on and tries to be a model.
Yeah, no, I think you're thinking of Queer Elf for the straight guy. Which
I'm Queer Elf for the gay elf.
which just implies that there's another elf, and he's also called Elf, and he's gay.
Yeah, obviously.
And there's zero difference, because I don't remember seeing all that much of a romantic interest in Elf's life outside of the cartoon.
Well, yeah. I mean, the show was... Man, the show was something terrible. Did you watch Alf when it was on?
I am sure I watched an episode or two. I mean, I was seven in the time period when this movie came out. Because this is, to place the Alf movie, this came out between the first and second seasons of Alf.
Yeah.
So this came out in 1987, so I mean, I must have watched it. I remember The Simpsons was on at that point, and I remember watching that with my parents. Like, every Thursday night, we'd get a Domino's pizza, and we'd watch The Simpsons.
Wow. Man, I did not watch any of The Simpsons when it was first on, because it was that whole, like, we're not sure if The Simpsons is a, like, good-for-kids show.
I mean, I understand that. I remember that weird backlash. That backlash used to happen against every cartoon, or, like, Elf, for example, got it, because they were like, oh, well, it's got a puppet on it. It's definitely a children's show. Oh, think of the children. It's children don't want to watch fucking Alf. He's boring as hell.
No, that's the reason that it got anything, though, is because kids are going to watch Alf because they're like, I don't realize that these jokes are non-jokes.
Yeah.
All I'm doing is watching a puppet.
Yeah, that's true. But I remember The Simpsons got that huge backlash, but my parents did not care because they thought the show was hilarious. And what were they going to do? Kick me out of the house so they could watch The Simpsons? We lived in like a two-bedroom house in L.A. There was nowhere safe for me to go. Every time I'd go outside otherwise, I'd get bacterial encephalitis.
Every time.
Literally.
Every single time you went outside.
I went outside once. Now, granted, to be fair, I was outside for 14 years.
Never went back in.
You know, that's actually a true story. When my brother...
You were outside for 14 years?
Almost. When my brother was born, I was at the height of my insane hyperactivity attention deficit. And I know every kid in the 80s had both of those, but I had them for very real. Like, I still have them. To me, just trying to sit down and write my name on a piece of paper is like trying to do that for anyone else if they were surrounded by an orchestra. So it's just a really big problem for me. That's why I do this podcast, because it's one of the very few things I can pay attention to.
Oh, yeah.
But when my brother was born, I was impossible to allow in the house because I would forget to be quiet. And so between my brother being born and him being about four, I was literally not allowed in the house unless it was my bedtime. I could drink from the hose. There would be a lunch placed outside for me. I grew up. That's why I got encephalitis. I grew up on the streets of Torrance, California.
The mean streets of Torrance.
No, the very nice suburban streets of Torrance.
The incredibly mean streets of
Torrance.
Definitely
very safe. If I got any injuries, they were all because I was doing things like oiling up plastic toboggans so I could ride them down the ice plant hills. I cracked open my Bozak on more than one occasion, John.
Wow.
Yeah. You ever seen the inside of a Bozak? That is some gross shit in there. It's like, balls look like little brains.
This is a wonderful trip. I'm really glad we decided to watch this just so I could get this wonderful view into your childhood.
Yeah, the fact that I was basically a ragamuffin for most of my childhood because I was just not allowed in.
Street urchin.
I really was.
Dickensian.
Yeah. No, I would just run up and down the streets and beg for pennies from passersby. Other kids would take pity on me and let them in their houses, and then their parents, who were all part of the network of parents, would see me in there and be like, no, he can't be in houses.
He's not allowed inside. He's not house trained.
You can entertain him in the garage.
Look, I'm going to give you a snack pack to take out to that poor unfortunate kid, but you do not let him in here. Probably got fleas.
I've definitely had fleas and ticks and Lyme disease and again, bacterial encephalitis, which at the time had a 92% fatality rate.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm a miracle baby, John.
You're one of the lucky ones.
I am. I used to be until I watched the Alf movie.
Guys, we are going to play a little music, and we will come right back with the full weird spoiler review of the Alf movie.
You're the one who's out of this world, sweet baby. You're the one who's out of this world. I'm spinning in an orbit I ain't never been in, 'cause you're the one who's out of this world.
All right, let's get into this review, but honestly, I want to spend this entire hour talking about your childhood, because that shit is just delicious.
I mean, I have literally no part of that is kidding. I can tell you with experience exactly which flowers on my street were poisonous or not.
From taste test?
That's correct.
Good.
Uh-huh. One time I had to entertain myself for a good week because I found someone's slatted screen door that they had thrown in their garbage. One of those ones with the wooden slats. And I stole it from their garbage, took it apart, and used the slats to make boomerangs and gliders and stuff for a solid week.
I swear to God, I thought you were going to say skis, and then you used that to go down a hill.
No, but one time I did. One of the people who lived across the street from me in South Torrance was a surfboard constructor. He would work and build surfboards. I stayed away from his house because the fiberglass air from it actually kind of hurt to breathe.
Oh, yeah.
So I would stay away from his house, but one time I found a surfboard in his trash, which I liberated, kicked the skeg off of, and went down a hill on that, and once again opened up my Bozak real good. No, I might as well.
Do you just have a fucking zipper on there now?
Every dude does. You know the seam. The only difference is that my seam has been stitched twice.
Jesus Christ, man.
No, I was more or less, I would be allowed in at night to go to bed. I was more or less homeless during the summer for about 4 years.
Wild wolf-raised child.
It's no joke. I lived on a street that had hills on both sides, like we're at the bottom of a valley on this hill, and I went down those hills on anything. Literally anything.
But especially your Bozak.
Well, okay, so here's the one that hurt me the most. A boogie board precariously balanced on two skateboards. Not taped to, just held down with the body weight of a 9-year-old.
Oh my God, everything about this is magic.
I went down it once on a roller racer, which I don't know if you ever tried to ride one of those, but they're powered by turning rapidly from left to right, and that's it. When you try to drive them down a straight hill, eventually they buckle, turn hard left, you fly 50 feet forward over concrete, and your Bozak is flayed.
Oh, man. My childhood was refusing how to learn how to ride a bike because I was like, nah, that's dangerous. I'm going to stay inside. Thank you. I've got my whole world of imagination in this book about ghosts.
I know. I was about to say, you were mostly just swaddled up reading about ghosts and eating marshmallows from a bowl.
Just sitting in the living room, swaddled in a blanket, reading books about mythology and ghosts.
Oh, man, bring me another bowl of Lucky Charms. Oops, all marshmallows, please, Mom.
Oh, man, I am amazed that these two roads have converged in the way that they have.
It makes no sense that we're friends. If we had met at the time, we would not have been.
No, I'd have
been
like...
Or maybe we would, but I'd be like the person who keeps throwing rocks at your window. Hey, let me in.
Hey, let me into your house. Mom says I can't.
Dressed in just like a Tarzan outfit.
Yeah, just fucking loincloth and dirty.
Dirt radiating off me like pig pen. Come on, we'll go on an adventure.
I don't like adventures. You would be my manic pixie dream friend.
Hey, maybe I still am.
The Alf movie. Jesus Christ.
So you can easily place this movie if you do even the remotest amount of Alf trivia knowledge. Because one of the things about the Alf show was, like we were mentioning in the opening, Alf was more or less, he kept getting tamer as the show went on.
Well, yeah, when he first started, it was... definitely a thing where I'm like, wow, I didn't realize that you would be able to get away with that on like primetime, but also puppet show.
Yeah, the first season was groundbreaking for the 1980s because he was like, he spent a lot of time dropping drug references or threatening to eat the family cat or one time he took a bath with a plugged in like toaster or something. This is, I remember reading about this in the news that on the show, he took a bath with a plugged in toaster And then some kid tried it.
Yeah, because the weird thing for Alf was sort of throughout the entire series, he was basically, I mean, indestructible, but also very proven to be, like, not hurt by electricity. There are a lot of scenes in Alf where he'll, like, jam a finger into a socket or do something with circuits.
It's almost like the running gag of the show was that him and the dad character would be, like, doing some tinkering together, and then the dad would get a shock and Alf wouldn't.
Yeah, like, Willie's, like, the only person from that family that is in this fucking movie.
Oh, yeah, this movie was shot on the weirdly cheap. It's a bizarre, I don't understand how this came into existence. It's so...
Like, I almost feel like this is, like, a promo movie for the show, like a...
Like a pilot?
Yeah, it feels like it's a pilot after they already had a pilot.
Yeah, like, they had this thing sitting around after they did the pilots, and so they were like, well... We'll run this thing as a movie because we have a gap in our year.
It was
oh no, Punky Brewster dropped two episodes. Run this thing.
Yeah, I mean, it honestly feels like this is what they ran to try and ask for a second season. They're like, hey, come on, guys.
Well, it's particularly notable because it drops all the major conventions of a 1980s TV movie. They don't go to Australia, and it's not Christmas.
Well, they also don't go to Hawaii, which is the other thing that you do.
Yeah, there's no Elf's Island adventure happening here. And it's not, they don't learn a Christmas lesson. And at the very end, you hear it, like the show proves that Santa Claus is real.
Yeah.
Like, what's the list of shows, sitcoms, where Santa is actually real?
I mean, that would be very easy for Alf to just be like, yeah, Santa's real and he's on Melmac.
He's another one, whatever I am. Am I Melmacian? I don't know.
I'm a Melmaco-er.
I'm a Melmaco. That's what we call ourselves, Melmacos. Ha!
We call ourselves Melmaclamores.
That joke's going to be funny in 20 years. I probably shouldn't tell it then. Ha! I kill me.
Ha!
And no one else.
No one likes this.
What's my appeal?
So the entire thing with this is we get the opening of this where... another craft is crashing down to Earth,
mm-hmm.
and we find our villain of the movie, which is fucking, I don't know what his name is, John Locke from Lost. Whatever.
That's Terry O'Quinn.
Terry O'Quinn, there you go.
And I watched Lost as religiously as you did, but I always, for my entire life, will think of him as Howard Hughes from The Rocketeer.
Wow, I didn't, what?
Yeah, no, there's two scenes with Howard Hughes in The Rocketeer, and he plays him, he's got a wig on, because I think Terry O'Quinn's been bald since, like, 1985. he played villains in, like, Miami Vice and stuff, but yeah, in The Rocketeer, there's the scene where, I don't know if you remember this, where Cliff's old buddy swaps the rocket pack for a 1950s Lux-looking vacuum cleaner.
Man, I don't remember shit from that movie. I have not watched The Rocketeer in like 25 years.
Well, okay, I'll just skip to the good scene then. Cliff Secord has to raid Howard Hughes' building in order to steal the plans for the rocket pack so that he can fix it or something. He needs it for Peavy, who's the guy who builds shit for him.
Okay.
While escaping, Howard Hughes is like sort of chasing him, and then Cliff jumps up, grabs onto a big old scale model of the Spruce Goose, and glides out of the building. And then it cuts back over to Howard Hughes, who goes, huh, so it will fly.
I have zero recollection of this.
Here's the thing, The Rocketeer is one of my all-time favorite superheroes, and that's also one of my all-time favorite superhero movies.
All right.
So I remember it. To a T. I mean, of course it's my favorite superhero movie. It's got a fucking GB in it. It's got two GBs in it.
It's got heebie-jeebies in it.
Also,
it's got CBGBs.
Yeah, they go to CBGBs. Yeah, they do some dancing around with Steve Allen.
Steve Allen.
They do some dancing around with the guy who sang Camp Granada.
Good job.
I'm sorry. They do some... I mean, that would be less gross than them dancing around with G.G. Allen, who is who I meant to say. Hey, I'm the Rocketeer. Oh, that's great. I got shit on myself. I'm eating broken glass. Oh, I hate you.
Ugh.
And yeah, there's also some heebie-jeebies because, you know, there's that terrifying Nazi British character.
Yeah.
And then here's the only scene you should remember. The part where the cops and the Nazis get along because... the cops and the mob get along because, by God, they're American.
Yeah, at least they ain't Nazis.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I love that movie.
So John Locke sees the fucking thing coming down, and he is tracking it.
Yes, wearing a suit, and he's doing This is set too far back for him to be doing the other big elements of being a government agent. He doesn't have the cord connected to an earpiece.
No.
Instead, he's got a big old fucking chasing around E.T. style walkie-talkie.
Yeah, and, you know, just watching one of those, like, ping on the radar things.
Mm-hmm. Which, of course, because this show had a budget of about 15 cents, is, like, it's actually just a picture of the ship crashing.
Yeah.
And not just, like, a blip.
You're like, okay, I don't think that's how radar works, but sure.
Yeah, whatever. It's the government. They got secret tracky radars.
They got weird radar here at the government.
But anyway, he's sitting in some government building. We don't know where. I like to assume it's the Pentagon. And then he's looking at this radar, which is helpfully just labeled Chicago. And he's like, yes, we got one. And then he picks up the phone to start dialing it. But because this movie has a cast of fours, he doesn't actually call or speak to anyone.
No, we get to cut to fucking Alf and Willie.
Sitting in a building where Willie gets the unenviable job of announcing that he will be the only cast member here.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's like that scene in fucking Batman v Superman where they have to go like, oh, they're fighting at the docks. Thankfully, no one is there.
That took me so far out of that movie. That was such a swing in the other direction for the DC franchise, where the first one was just like, nah, fucking kill everyone in Metropolis. Who gives a flying
fuck?
Yeah,
we're going to blow up hundreds of thousands of people. Who cares? Whatever.
What's going on in Gotham, though? Oh, everyone goes home at 6.
Yeah. Oh, they're in the downtown. Thankfully, it's 7 o'clock and no one's there. Wait, what?
That was in Metropolis, too. I love the idea that Metropolis just cleans up and goes home.
Yeah, downtown Metropolis is just a fucking ghost town once it gets past quitting time.
But in this case, Willie says, he's just like, man, it's so nice and quiet around here ever since my wife took the two kids off for their summer vacation together. And then, you know, you hear the clattering in the kitchen and smoke bursts out from between the little, like, cowboy-style doors. Because the house has one of those, like swing door pantry serving station things.
Yeah, so instead of having like a full wall between like the living room and the kitchen, there's one of those like
half wall,
like half walls that's got like a sliding.
Yeah, and you know they added that because that way you could just have Fusco standing there and doing the puppet.
Yeah, it's just way easier to do all the puppet stuff if it's like, what is this? Oh, he's propping himself up at this window.
Have you ever read about the process of making the show?
I have not.
The show was filmed on a 2-foot high platform. Like, the whole house was built on a 2-foot high platform so that the puppeteers could walk around underneath. And apparently, the whole show is full of outtakes of the actors falling in the holes. Because it was really hard to remember where they all were, because the whole place was completely rigged up for Alf puppets.
Yeah.
And there'd be, like, three puppeteers down there. And then for this, you can see it happening in this season as well, though they dropped this by the next season. Alf facial features were controlled by radio control. There was a fourth puppeteer whose only job was to sit there with a friggin' like airplane radio control and can make him smile and stuff.
Oh, good.
So, but anyway, you know, he's like, ah, it sure is quiet here. Crash, crash, bang, bang, smoke, smoke. Alf.
Yeah. So the lot of them are getting along until they get the fucking phone call.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that crash, though. The crash, brash, smoke, smoke. And then Alf opens up the stupid little double doors and smoke comes piling out. And he's like, hey, how many waffle irons does the average human house have?
I cannot understand I'm going to say this. Every fucking joke in this is the worst joke. It's like a non-joke. Like, you know, you'd have a thing where he's like, oh, no, I electrocuted myself. That's electricity. And you're like, that's not a joke. You can't just say what happened. Like, oh, that guy fell down. Ha! And you're like, no.
I bet his butt hurts.
You can't just do that.
And indeed they do.
Ugh.
So yeah, it turns out that he is stuck alone at home with Alf. And then, yeah, they get a phone call.
Yeah, and it's... I don't know... Who's the fucking... Did you look up who the other fucking alien...
Oh, I recognized him immediately. I mean, he's been... you know me and my Disney movie obsession, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this guy has been in Pocahontas. Let's see, what else? Beauty and the Beast. Oh, God. He's been in at least two... Lilo and Stitch and at least one other movie. I think Hercules? This is David Ogden Steers.
I don't know who that is.
So David Ogden Steers is an actor, voice actor type guy who's been around for fucking forever, like since the late 60s. He was on MASH. He was like a big fucking deal on MASH. And then after that, he goes on to become a voice actor. He's still working. I don't know if he's dead, actually. But he was working as recently as the mid-2000s. But a couple roles you'd probably remember him for, the big two are Dr. Jumba from Lilo and Stitch.
Nope.
Oh, shit. Well, okay, a lot of my listeners, our listeners, are like, oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah, your listeners. My listeners aren't.
My listeners, the elite, are going, oh, yeah, Jumba, the four-eyed big old alien with a vaguely Russian accent, who's like, you know, ah, yes, at this point he will attempt to conquer major city, that kind of thing. And then also, probably more to your speed, he was Cogsworth.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, I got you.
Yeah, so David...
I got you, fam.
So David Ogden Steers calls... and he's David Ogden Steers. He's like, hello, I'm David Ogden Steers.
Yeah.
I say it like that, David Ogden Steers. Like I'm I'm that crappy doctor from The Simpsons.
Hi, everybody. Hi, David Ogden Steers.
Here we have the tombstone of noted poet Edgar Allan Poe. No, they get a call, and it's amazing how little setup this movie bothers with.
Oh yeah.
It's like, just, it's so paint by numbers.
Like the fact that they get a call and it's for Gordon.
Yeah.
And Willie's like, wait, what?
Who? Gordon? Like, what? And he's all like freaked out briefly because he's like, oh, how do you have this number? And so on. But, you know, he gives it to Gordon and the voice is just like, hey, Gordon. I can't do his voice, John. He's a little effete, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, it would be not Cogsworthy, but like of that same thing where he's like,
kind of a Niles.
Yeah. He's like, oh, Gordon, hey, it's your brother Mitch.
Yeah, and we're like, okay, so first of all, let's stop all the presses here because I know every member of Alf's fucking family because while I never watched this late night TV show about Alf, I definitely watched that cartoon.
I know I did watch the cartoon. The weird thing to me is I can only remember the very briefest of snippets from it. I remember more of the actual Alf show, which was on earlier, than I do of the cartoon.
Oh, man, the things I remember about the cartoon are the cartoon was perfectly... This is so weird to me that on the show, censors kept telling them to stop doing things. Quit eating cats. Quit having Alf hurt himself. Quit having Alf make drug references. But on the cartoon, they were fine with all of that.
Oh, yeah.
You want to play baseball with live fish? It's fine. Do it it's Saturday morning. It's fine. Who's watching this? Definitely more kids, but don't worry about it.
Yeah, but because it's cartoon, they're like, oh, no one will want to do this because it's a cartoon.
Yeah, and the theme song to the Alf cartoon show was sung by cats that Alf wanted to eat. although the show was called Alf, like the animated series or whatever, the word Alf was never said on it. They just called him Gordon.
Yeah, because that's his name.
Yeah.
Because Alf was what was, it's his slave name. Yeah.
Your name is Alf. Gordon Shumway. Oh, my gosh. So, but on the show, he had a little brother and sister, but neither of them was named Mitch.
Yeah. I have to imagine that probably the cartoon just didn't even bother watching the TV show or anything.
Well, it's not like this character's going to show up again. Fuck, David Ogden Steers is in Alf again. I checked.
Oh, my God, is he?
He's on in season 3. He does 2 episodes as a character named Flaky Pete.
That was my nickname in high school.
Same.
Weird, right?
Am I doing the joke right, John?
Is that the joke?
Am I doing same correctly?
Yeah, you know what else you're doing correctly? Vaudeville.
Hey, that's my line. So Mitch is calling and he's like, oh, capital, you know, he's kind of like almost like a proto Stewie.
Yeah.
It's weird to hear, although it's, you know, David Ogden Steers doesn't sound a fucking thing like Stewie.
No.
But he's got some similar mannerisms coming out of a bit more of a raspy baritone of a voice.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It takes some getting used to. But he's like, oh, capital, please come and meet me immediately. I've come on vacation.
Yeah, and so now we have to have a fucking road trip with Willie and Alf to go get Mitch.
Have you ever seen so much random B-roll of a street going by in the background?
Oh my God.
Why did they drive?
It's like fucking 4 minutes of establishing shots, and then they'll like cut into the car, and Alf will just be like sitting in the passenger seat just so we can establish that, yes, it is indeed them.
And they're still driving through a suburban neighborhood everywhere they go. Let's be clear here. They are going to Chicago to meet this Mitch character that I guess is Alf's brother, and also to quickly get to him before, because Alf knows that government
oh, yeah.
guys will catch him. So they're like, lay low and we'll come to you. But But I mean, the Tanner family, where Alf lives, is in the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the show doesn't fucking mention. So it's we had to look this, or the movie doesn't mention. We had to look this up, but it's clear that the whole movie is in Southern California.
Oh, yeah. It's like, we're driving to Chicago. Here we are in Chicago. Yeah. This is L.A.
this is
Chicago.
Welcome to Chicago. Didn't you see the establishing shot of Wrigley Stadium?
Didn't you see the big sign that says, welcome to Chicago, and then... We are here.
That sign that said Chicagoland area, and it's got like the arrow pointing or whatever from the opening to Perfect Strangers.
Yeah. It was like basically a shot for shot remake of the opening to Perfect Strangers so that you can establish that, yes, indeed, we are in Chicago.
Yeah. It's not enough that we're going to Chicago. We have to go to all the landmarks first real quick, and then we'll go where we're going.
Oh, yeah. Hey, how do we find this guy? I don't know. I got to drive literally all over town.
We took the subway to that one important theater that everyone cares about. Anyway, back to the car. So, yeah, so they drive for, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes. Not a full screen time, but there's no mention made of the fact that driving from the San Fernando Valley of California to Chicago, Illinois, is about a 2.5 day drive.
No, it's just sort of a, let's do a few shots, and then we are there. And I'm like, you know what, fine. If you want to go ahead and say that you're just going to drive there like it's a fucking Sunday drive, great.
I mean, to be fair, there are a couple of, like, gags that they do along the way. Like, they stop at the Grand Canyon so that fucking Alf can say something ridiculous. And he's like, on my planet, we'd fill that thing with soup or whatever it fucking is. I don't even... And then also they have a drive-through bit.
Yeah.
Which, of course they do. So they go through a drive-through and, you know, Willie's like, I'll have one number one. There's no nerdier, sad little character than Willie Tanner on television.
I have to say, he's sort of like a weird outlier for me in sitcoms, in that a lot of the time, the dad, like, you don't really get that weird nerd thing for the dad.
No, I mean, the closest you probably get is the one, the Michael J. Fox show, where the dad is kind of a peace-loving, hippy-dippy archetype.
But even then, he's still, like, very clearly... like, the man of the house, and he's a real dad, and you get a lot of, like, stern father figures, and occasionally you'll get shit where it's like, oh, I'm a coach, or I'm, like, some kind of person who's in charge of things. But Willie Tanner is, like, the most beset upon, sad dump of a man.
He's a little handyman type or something, and okay, let me float a concept by you, John. Willie Tanner lives with Alf for about 5 years. At the end of that, the show just ends abruptly. It's set up for a sixth season, but never happens. At the end of that, he suddenly realizes that Alf is a puppet. Like, he thought the whole time he's been living with an alien. And then he realizes there's all these holes in his floor, and he's been living with a puppet and a bunch of puppeteers, and he goes completely insane. And he is a little balding man with perfectly circular glasses. And the next thing you know, he shows up in Gotham as the ventriloquist.
Oh, that's good.
Right?
That's a good ending for that.
And then Batman beats him up over and over again, and he keeps making Scarface again.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he looks like the ventriloquist, and his show was him hanging around a puppet.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very true.
It's weird. It's weird that no one makes this connection ever.
No.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it, yes, 100%.
Yeah, it's insane. But yeah, they have to do a little drive through, and he's like, I'll have one, number one.
Do they have cats?
Yeah, I'll take two cat burgers.
I want the kitty fries.
Sir, did you say you would like the children's fries?
No, I want kitty fries! Please, Alf, shut up.
Yeah, that's basically the whole thing. It's just him trying to order insane food, you know? Like, I'll also take one tureen of bouillabaisse. And you're like, what? Bouillabaisse? What are you doing?
All right, fine. Do you have a lasagna?
How much hair does your serving boy have? It's very unusual. I mean, I shouldn't say it's unusual. I'm guessing if you were a regular fan of Elf at the time, you're like, God, how many boring regular Elf jokes are going to be in this thing?
All of them.
Every single
one.
All
of the boring Elf jokes.
So, anyway, they get to Chicago, and over, like, a street vendor, over a couple of Chicago dogs, they finally get to meet the character that's unique to this movie, Mitch.
Mitch Shumway, who... pretty much just looks like if you gave Alf, instead of a Hawaiian shirt, he was wearing, like, a little suit.
Yes, that's true. He does have a stupid little suit.
I'm like, come on, guys. You took one of your spare Alf puppets and put different clothes on it.
That's exactly what happened. And I always kind of expected that there would be at least one episode of Alf where a girl Alf showed up.
And it just has a bow?
It's just an Alf with a bow and like eyebrow or eyelashes.
Yeah.
Apparently that never happened.
It's sad, really.
Yeah.
I think probably they learned the lesson from this.
Don't do this. People will figure it out right away. But yeah, it's a little Alf with black horn-rimmed glasses and a little bow tie and a suit.
Yeah.
It kind of just looks like if Alf was Rivers Cuomo. So
Willie has to really try and get them to the hotel where they're staying at. And that's where we get the first meeting of fucking Agent Jeffries, which is John Locke.
Yeah, we don't. I couldn't possibly call him anything other than Locke or Howard Hughes, but yeah.
Yeah.
Or I guess Terry O'Quinn. I mean, the dude's got a huge body of work.
No, he is 100% just John Locke to me forever, and I mean, don't care.
To be fair, Lost is probably his biggest success.
Oh, yeah.
I mean
he's been
in movies.
Remember him from something.
Yeah, he's been in a dozen movies, but Lost was practically his starring role because, I mean, he gets a bunch of episodes.
Oh, yeah. There's a shitload about him specifically. He's a very important character.
Yeah. And right now, I literally can't remember the name of the actual character that was supposed to be the main character. Was it just Jack?
Jack.
Fucking Jack. It's always Jack.
Yeah, it's always Jack.
Did you know that Jack, literally, is like 35 to 40% of the names of leading characters in Hollywood?
Yeah, and they're all architects.
Well, I mean, all Jacks are architects is an outdated stereotype, sir.
But all architects are Jacks.
I gotta say, as far as your stereotypes about Jack go, you're Jack off.
Hey!
On that one. I tried, but that was terrible.
No, that was really bad.
I'm sorry. I kill me and no one else.
I kill me!
So Mitch, it turns out, has decided to just visit his brother Alf, or Gordon, and he just dropped whatever he was doing and flew down. And he's doing that weird sitcom thing and movie thing that you get used to in seeing in movies and stuff that you never see anywhere else, which is, I decided to come visit. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm doing Alf's voice for him. Oh, I've decided to come visit you. And, you know, unfortunately, I've decided to come without calling or making any sort of prior plans. And I'm going to be here for 6 weeks.
Yeah. And of course, Willie's like, this is so weird, Alf. He doesn't sound anything like you. Yeah, he's the black sheep of the family. And you're like, oh, okay, good. This is what we're going with.
Yeah. It turns out. And there's a big twist gag coming pretty soon here, where it turns out that despite Mitch sounding like that and wearing glasses and a suit, that he's the dumb one on Melmac. Like, because but I think it's just because it's supposed to be, you know, Melmac is fucking opposite planet.
Oh yeah, Melmac is some weird, like, if you had a whole planet of parrot heads is basically what Melmac is.
Yes, and then he's the one who's like, oh, fellows, who would like to play a game of quoits? And they're all like, oh, you dummy. And he's like, I've been reading the work of famed author Alexander Painwright or something. And they're all like, oh, you big dummy. You doof.
You idiot.
Yeah.
You absolute moron.
So we're doing that where Willie's going to be led to think that this dude's a nerd, but it turns out he's kind of a dope.
Yeah.
He's also, I mean, basically, this is the weirdest thing about the movie. He's basically uninhibited Alf.
Well, yeah, it's, Alf essentially has, at this point, an entire season's worth of people admonishing him not to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we can't have you going outside and doing stuff unless you're in some weird disguise.
Definitely don't eat any cats you see.
Yeah. And so, you know, fucking Mitch is just like, oh yeah, no, I'm going to go and try and eat cats. I'm going to try and be as huge of a dumbass as I can be.
I've come to sample the great cats of the upper Northwest, he says. And Al's like, oh, no.
Oh, they don't like it when you try to eat their pets.
Yeah, and that's the joke.
Yeah, that's the whole joke. Locke fucking shows up at their hotel. And, of course, Alf and Mitch have to go hide, and they're just hiding on the fucking stairwell outside.
Oh, yeah, they do the thing where there's a knock at the door, and Willie has to answer it.
This is the weirdest thing to me, is they're in a hotel, but, I mean, are there hotels that have the fucking fire escape? I assume there must be. I think this is a West Coast thing for me, where I don't...
We never see fire escapes here.
I never see a fire escape.
No, because they'd fall off in an earthquake.
Yeah.
That's why we don't have them. There's a whole bunch of differences between Chicago buildings and Los Angeles buildings that all make perfect... Or San Diego buildings, in our case, that all make perfect sense. You can build them in Chicago, and every building in Chicago is made out of just bricks.
Yeah.
You can't do that here.
You can't just have bricks.
That shit would come apart like a bad Jenga tower.
You can't have a basement.
Yeah, you can't have basements, you can't have bricks, and you can't have fire escapes here. But I'm guessing that they probably make fire escapes a relatively regular thing on old Chicago hotels. And of course, because this is a sitcom movie, they're going to the oldest possible Chicago hotel so it can look all Chicago-y.
Oh yeah, it's just a shitty rundown little motel.
Yeah, so they go and they hide on the fire escape, and, you know, fucking, what was it, Jeffries? Agent Jeffries comes up and he's like, sir, we've had reports of unusual disturbances in this area. Have you seen any little green men?
Oh, no, sir. Nothing like that here.
Anything that goes bump in the night. That kind of shit, right?
Yeah.
And you know, Willie's just trying to explain it away and get rid of him. But, of course, because it's an Alf movie, Mitch is out on the fire escape, like, trying to catch and eat pigeons.
Yeah.
And so you hear all these ruffly banging noises. He's like, get in my mouth, you bird! and he's, you know, Jeffries is like, did you hear something?
Oh, no, I must have left the TV on.
Mm, yes, I was watching. I'm sorry, I'm doing everyone's voices today. I don't know why I'm doing that. But he's like, yeah, I was watching that hit new show, Get In My Mouth, You Bird. And then I'm rehearsing for a play called Get In My Mouth, You Bird.
Also, there's a radio drama, Get In My Mouth, You Bird. Also, the new hit single, Get In My Mouth, You Bird.
And I'm listening to this book on tape, Get In My Mouth, You Bird.
Weird, right?
Yeah.
Odd convergence. Anyway, goodbye.
Thank you for visiting.
Bye.
So yeah, he manages to mollify him this time, although it's a comedy of bouncing errors.
Yeah. And at this point, they fucking lose Mitch out from the fire escape.
Oh, yeah, because he was like, get in my mouth, you bird! And then he jumps off the fire escape to catch one, just assuming that, I guess, on Melmac, he can fly or... They don't explain this.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of points where you'll just see, like, the puppet of Alf in the show go, like, flying off in some direction because mm-hmm. it's a sight gag.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of like, oh, we dropped the puppet for Mitch off the side of this building, and he just went, whoop!
Yeah. So he lands in a garbage truck. We get to see that. But that's all, because then they cut back to Alf going, oh, no, I'm going to get blamed for this.
So now they have to go fucking wander around Chicago, which is basically a excuse to use more of the establishing shots.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I want to say, like, 80s public access grade, like, green screen rear projection footage here.
Oh, yeah.
Of Alf just being shook up and down violently as he just gets carried across images of the streets of Chicago.
It is real cheap. Like, just sadly cheap.
Yeah. Oh, the meatpacking district. I bet they could pack meat into me. Ha! That kind of thing. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And it's that level of a bare bones humor where no one stops to think about how terrible of a gay joke that also was.
Oh, people stopped to think.
I mean, no one on the cast or crew, but all the folks at home were like, oh, come on now.
Hey now. Whoa, hey.
Whoa, it's 1987. That stuff doesn't fly.
Oh, look, the fudge packing district.
We've gone through the fudge packing district, the meat packing district, the ass packing district, the gay sex district.
the penis in butt district.
And here we are in old hand job district.
Old hand job district.
It's called the old hand job district. There's a new hand job district, but it didn't take off. Nowadays, it's just called the commerce area.
Oh, my God. So,
I think we just made the movie 10 times
better.
Oh,
yeah. I think our jokes are better than this fucking movie's jokes.
Paul Fusco, call us.
Call me. I've got a new hit for you.
I've got a crazy idea for you. Alf, but he's funny now.
Alf, but with jokes.
I mean, I'm sure that someone already had that idea, and his name is Triumph the Insult Comic Dog.
Yeah, that's pretty much what Triumph is just Alf with jokes.
Yeah, just sort of, it's what's his name? Smigel? Robert Smigel?
Smigel.
Smigel. It's Robert Smigel.
Yes, precious.
My precious dog puppet.
So yeah, just call us, and we have a great idea for you. It's called Alf the Insult Comic Alien.
Yeah, good. That's what we're going with.
So
we get the big actual crossover thing here, which was not a long scene, but definitely unexpected.
Yeah, no, it's definitely true. They are wandering through that park in Chicago where the free zoo is.
Yeah.
And while they're doing some this is the one shot in this that looks like they actually used a location. I don't think it's the actual free zoo. I've been there, and it didn't look like it very much. But,
no.
But they had a popcorn stand in the background, and you know, like a cage wall, but no animals coming up to it. And then while Alf is doing some backwards picture taking walking, he bumps into someone, turns around, and wouldn't you know it, it's 1987 Soleil Moonfry.
Yeah, it is Punky goddamned Brewster, who immediately thinks that Alf is her dog because she's looking for her dog.
Yes, so that's the big gag we have here, is that, and she has some routine that she spills out about how she's here because the dog always comes here and she keeps expecting that one of the tigers is going to eat him.
Yeah, and I mean, like, when she bumps into Alf, she's like, oh, there you are, and like turns around and hugs him, and then Alf's like, whoa, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, it's especially funny once she gets the leash on him.
Yeah. I like you as a friend.
Yeah. My safe word is boyabase. Once again, call us, Paul Fusco.
Call us, Alf with jokes.
Because I think the actual line was, I'm not a dog.
Yeah, you're like, come on, man, have a joke, please.
Any joke at all.
What are you, my ex-wife?
I'm in Chicago, not Germany.
Yeah, so they have like a 3-minute adventure of finding this fucking dog before he asks if she's seen anyone like him.
Yeah, and then, you know, in another little minor cameo moment, they find the dog. She says, oh yeah, I did think I saw my dog. That's why I chased him all the way to the park. I saw him passing by on a horse-drawn carriage.
So now he's off to find a fucking horse-drawn carriage.
And we get the other, George Gaines shows up for one shot in this movie. He's the guy who played Punky's adopted ward, Mr. Ganimont or whatever his name was.
Mr. Ganymede.
I don't remember. I never watched Punky Brewster. That wasn't my jam. But he played like the Daddy Warbucks to her Annie.
Yeah.
And so,
although he's, you know, like real middle class. So
he's extraordinarily middle class.
He's like, I have an apartment.
He played Daddy No Bucks to her Annie.
Daddy Middle Bucks.
Oh, that's right. This was the 80s. There was still a middle class.
Yeah, a middle class existed. It was the mid-80s.
I forgot about that. Shoot, that was a time where you could have one. You could be retired and still be able to afford an apartment in Chicago.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I've got an apartment, and it's a 2-bedroom.
Yeah.
And it's just me.
I need to fill this with a adorable but says everything that's on her mind little scamp of a kid and her wily dog.
Yep, that's what I need.
So
some kid and a golden retriever.
But he pops up to basically say, Punky! Punky Brewster, and then she's like, oh, that's me, and you know, the two of them walk off together.
Yeah, and I was like, that's, I mean, I was kind of surprised given how low budget this is, but they were on the same network, so I guess they were just sort of around.
Must have been. He has what I want to say is the only line in the movie that actually made me laugh, because he finds Punky, they hug, he looks up and he goes, thank you for finding her, Gordon, and then he turns and walks off. And I was like, what? It was like a twinkle in his eye Gordon moment. I was like, how does he... wait, is there an established continuity?
Do we have a crossover universe? Is there an expanded Alf universe?
Well, there is now. Now Alf is legitimately part of the Punky Brewster universe.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think means he's part of the Sabrina the Teenage Witch universe, which I think means he's part of
Archie,
which definitely means he's connected to the Punisher.
Which definitely means that on the show Riverdale, Alf is going to show up. Just you wait.
We're definitely going to get Alf on Riverdale. We're also going to get him doing a two-episode arc on Daredevil Season 3.
God, I would fucking love that so much.
Ah, I'd kill me, unless anyone has the balls to stop me.
Ah, I kill the hand. No one else will, you fucking pussy! Come on, Daredevil!
I'm your newest villain, Bulls Elf!
Bulls Elf for Harambe!
I never miss. I don't know why I'm giving... my accents are terrible, I apologize.
Yeah, it's just real bad for you, man.
But yeah, he's playing Bullseye, but he's Elf. That's the joke.
That's the joke.
That's the joke.
That's the tweet.
So... All right. So they know that he was, they last spotted him on a horse-drawn carriage. That's where Mitch was.
Yeah. Now, the great thing about this is, at this point, Alf basically does a, like that, follow that car taxi thing, but in another horse-drawn carriage, which then Also behind him has another horse-drawn carriage with fucking John Locke in it. And you're like, why are we doing this low-speed horse chase?
They're going like 2.5 miles an hour. At any point, Agent Jeffries could just get out and walk to the one horse-drawn carriage.
And I fucking love that Mitch is still in the carriage for some reason.
Yeah, and we're playing that 1970s cop Waka Chica music, you know?
Yeah.
Like the stuff you'd see on like Dragnet or something during a car chase. Waka Chica, Waka Chica. Yeah, that stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly that. Playing as three horse-drawn carriages, which could easily throw rocks to each other, are running through the park part of Chicago. But even then, when they pull out and show the shots of the horse-drawn carriages, it's clear they cut back to B-roll of them. You never see two of them in two horse-drawn carriages at the same time, which means that they had a horse-drawn carriage on their back lot in L.A. where they were filming this.
Yeah.
Just the carriage part.
Just the one.
And they were just taking turns putting the puppet in it and then putting Terry O'Quinn in it.
Oh, God. When they finally fucking get out, so both of them have their little outfits on, their disguises and hats,
mm-hmm.
and they go through a like an alleyway, and on the back of it, of course, Terry O'Quinn is like, I've got you, and it turns around, and it's just two little people in the same outfit. And you're like, this is the worst gag. Why are you doing this movie?
I mean, there are so many other ways they could have ended that and still kept the whole Elf goes to Chicago theme. We could have had, like, a parade for the Mets go by.
Because, yeah, but that would require people.
No, it also requires that the Mets be in Chicago instead of New York. I'm just saying that to piss off Chicago fans.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it could have been that wonderful borough of New York, Boston.
I'm terrible at geography and baseball teams.
You don't know where
Although,
things are.
If I hadn't said the Mets are from New York, you never would have stopped me.
Oh, I wouldn't have stopped you. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, no, it would be great if there was a parade for the Mets in Chicago.
Yeah, just we've got a New Mets Yorkers, parade.
Just a bunch of New Yorkers show up and parade around going, like, yeah, Mets. Try and stop us.
And boy howdy would Chicago. They take their sports so goddamn seriously. If you had a Mets parade, that shit would be on fire.
It's very true. No one in town would have batteries the next day, for all of them would have been thrown at Mets fans.
Yeah, like, I do not think that would be at all a capable thing to do and still live. Like, at some point, you would just be like, well, I've been thrown off of a building now.
But hey, it would definitely separate Agent Jeffries from Alf and Mitch.
Ugh.
And while he's chasing Alf, he yells out, stop, Alf! Which is, I know that on the show they occasionally said Alf. Like,
yeah.
That's what they called him in the house and so on. So this leads to a little conversation in another alley where the two aliens have escaped to, where Mitch goes, why do they call you Alf here?
And it's because it stands for alien life form.
Yeah.
So it actually makes sense that fucking John Locke will say that.
Yes. Yeah, he calls them Alfs because he wants to catch alien life forms. It's his, like, dream or something.
Yeah.
We don't get that much of his backstory, but the basic idea is that he's... in every cartoon where there's aliens or something, you have to have that obsessive person who knows the truth.
Oh, yeah. It's basically like a weird, menacing Mulder.
Yes. Yeah. He's like, I know the truth. There's definitely aliens, and I'm going to catch one.
I'm
going to
have proof. Finally, they'll stop laughing at me.
I'll catch one of these Alfs. So, you know, he has to explain it, and he's like, well, wait, aren't they going to give you a nickname? No, they're going to call me Mitch.
Oh, they've been calling me Alf.
They'll call me Mitch, dear boy.
No, my name is Mitch. You're Gordon. Why do they call you Alf?
Mitch is my name. I'm your brother. I'm quite dumb.
Oh, God. See, now I was just going to Back to the Future. I was like, it's your brother, Mitch Shumway. Get a load of this.
It's just some dude on
stage
bombing
it. And it's just fucking Borscht Belt shit.
I was going to say, some dude just hacking his way through friggin', like, Take My Wife stuff.
Oh, yeah. I said, that's not a woman, that's my wife.
I know you're out there, I can hear you not laughing. I just flew in from Chicago. Boy, is my wallet tired. Airplanes are expensive. Huh?
And what's the deal with airplane food?
Why don't they give you any?
Well, anymore.
I mean, I feel like that's a pretty good Borscht Belt joke now. What's the deal with airline food? How do I get some?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the answer is, you pay $12 and they will bring you a little food basket with, like, a bag of Cheez-Its in it.
Yeah, a wrapped sandwich, mm-hmm. and, like, better peanuts.
I did it once. I was on a flight for a job I had where they were sending me to some convention somewhere to, like, learn about being a development person. and I ordered food on the plane because it was like a 6-hour flight and I was hungry and bored.
Yeah.
So, but it was like, here, have raisins and figs and a little wedge of cheese. And also, once they know you're a food orderer, they'll keep showing up again.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the same thing if you had ordered alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be like, hey, did you want another beer or a tiny bottle of tequila?
Which makes me wonder if it's worth it on an airplane to just order one tiny bottle of tequila once just so I could have sodas the whole flight. Ooh, I think I might be tasty, feeling like another tequila in about, 20 minutes. But until then, can I get a Diet Coke? Although I don't drink Diet Coke on planes. It's all cranberry juice for me in the air.
Oh, really? I was going to say ginger ale. Ginger ale is the thing that you get on airplanes.
Ginger ale is quite good on airplanes, but I like cranberry juice when I'm on them. And there's actually a scientific explanation. It opens up parts of your mouth. The pressure changes the shape
of
your
mouth. Yeah, it opens up part of my mouth. The part that cranberry juice goes in.
The mouth part.
Yeah, that part where I put drinks.
There are a couple drinks that taste very different. Cranberry juice tastes different to me, but for most people it's either ginger ale or tomato juice.
Oh.
They both taste way different and apparently way better if you're in the sky.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
I love ginger ale on an airplane, but I always get cran. And I'll tell you the other reason to always get cran, no one else does, and they always give you the whole can.
I love when they give you the can.
Right?
And sometimes I'll get like a Dr. Pepper, and they're like, here's a whole can. No one wants that shit. I'm like, fuck yes.
You know, if you just ask for the whole can, they'll just give it to you.
Oh, I know.
But it feels weird to do it, right?
Yeah, it feels weird to be like, hey, I paid like several $100 to be here. Can I have a can of soda? And then you're like, oh, fucking Mr. Rockefeller here wants a can of soda.
You sure you should have 12 ounces of fluid, sir?
My goodness.
Oh, goodness, what a fatty.
Well, we want you to have here comes Mr. Millennial.
We want you to have 3 ounces of soda in the tiniest cup in the world.
It's mostly ice.
I have eaten every single ice cube I have ever been given on an airplane.
Yeah, fair.
It's just something to do. Anyway, Alf.
Yeah. So they finally meet back up with Willie, who finds them.
Yeah. No, they meet up with Willie, who just sort of randomly finds them at whatever friggin' sandwich shop they're at.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, man, you guys, we got to get you out of sight.
Yeah. Someone's going to discover who you are. And I'm like, man, at this point, we have had 2 aliens running around Chicago for the better part of a day, and no one gives a shit.
Well, Punky Brewster thinks they're dogs. What do we care, right?
Yeah, but then they talk to her, and that's the other thing, is the fact that she wasn't like, oh my god, fuck aliens, run. She was like, sweet, I'm
talking
on board.
Dogs.
Yeah, great, I love it.
Yeah, well, that's Punky Brewster for you. She has an unbreakable spirit and absolutely no disbelief reflex.
Oh my god, there's an episode of Punky Brewster where there's like demonic possession, and that fucked me up as a kid. Straight up. Not gonna lie.
Like, open the fridge in their little Chicago apartment, and it was like Zool and his pyramid in
there.
Oh
no, they went to like a fucking cave, and like a demon possessed the friends. They like turn around and have those glow in the dark green eyes, and I was like, nope.
Wow.
Nope, nope, nope.
Well, the reason I'm making the Ghostbusters jokes is because when I was that age, and what was Ghostbusters, 84, 85, somewhere in there?
Something like that.
When that movie came out, my parents took me to it in theaters. I was 4 or 5 years old, and just the librarian scared me out of my parents' lap, over my dad's head. And
nothing but net.
Into the lap of the person behind me, nothing but net. A random moviegoer who suddenly had a terrified, crying 5-year-old
in
his
lap. And he was like, whoa, what is this Dickensian urchin doing in my lap?
Well, to be fair, my brother was born when I was 6. So for the moment, I was safe, and I was still allowed within the confines of a warm family home.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. You were pre-orphanage.
Yes, that's before they got sick of me. I assume the only reason I wasn't sent to an orphanage is because it's expensive or hard to find.
Yeah,
I think that the reason they didn't surrender me at a fire station.
too old.
Yeah, they probably tried. And they were like, nope, too old.
Sorry, we only take babies.
They tried an abortion clinic.
Yo, is it too late?
Can you pull this thing out of me? That kid is clearly playing Game Boy, ma'am.
Oh, who give that kid a Game Boy?
How'd he get a Game Boy? They won't be invented for 4 more years.
That's weird. What is with this anachronistic nonsense?
It's almost like memories are weird and fuzzy.
Just like Alf.
Also, Jeffrey the Giraffe is here? Yeah, Alf is weird and fuzzy. All right.
Yep.
So they meet at a burger place. They agree to try and lay low for a while, and they do so by hiding in Wrigley Stadium.
Yeah.
Which, again, is just some backlot, like 3 rows of stadium benches.
Oh, yeah. It's just, we had definitely the background for anytime a family goes to a pro sports game, regardless of what it is, this is what we are using.
And then this is also our last celebrity sighting in the film, because they keep ordering hot dogs with increasingly stupid toppings from a put-upon, very young hot dog vendor played by Seth Green.
Very weird to see Seth Green in this.
He's like 9.
Oh, yeah. I mean, granted, he was doing shit around that time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He was in the fucking It TV movie.
Yes, he was in the It TV movie. He was in Radio Days, the Woody Allen film that came out like the same year as this.
Wow.
So, I mean, he was getting work.
Yeah.
I forget when, wasn't he in Stand By Me or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah, I forget when that came out. That's probably 90s.
Was he?
Well, okay, what's
no.
the... No.
No, it was Jerry O'Connell.
Oh, that's right. He was in the It TV movie. That's what you were talking about, of course. Yeah, he was Reggie, or Richie.
Richie.
Reggie.
He was Reggie Tidger. Boop, boop, Reggie, they'd say to him,
And he was a terrible prop comic, he was.
He was always like, hey, look at this hat I made. It claps for me, so people like my jokes. That's me.
Here's a toilet seat with a rear view mirror on it for when I have to pass gas, huh?
Huh?
Boop, boop, Reggie.
Jesus Christ.
When you said that, I thought you were saying he was in a TV remake of The Thing, because I consistently get The Thing and The It confused.
The It?
Even though I love both of those movies.
I love The It. That's a great movie.
Oh, The It. That's what, like, your grandfather calls Pennywise the Clown.
Ah, I remember The It. Go down and see The It.
But then I got old and I forgot what The It was.
It'll happen to you.
No, it's just some clown.
It's just that clown. So, you know, he's right over there. Hi.
So, yeah, Seth Green just punching a clock. And his job is to be a put-upon hot dog
Just a
guy.
Sad hot dog boy.
Yeah, who's doing that, you know, I've got a hot dog cart, like, slung over my shoulders, and I'm walking around yelling, hot dogs, get your hot dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Peanuts, popcorn, and used condoms. That guy. You know, you see that guy at every baseball. Yeah. Is that just our baseball stadium?
Yeah, that's ours. Okay, used condom guy? Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
I love him.
People who aren't from San Diego don't get that reference, though. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if you had come down and supported the Chargers, then maybe they would have stayed here and we could have kept our used condom guy.
No, we still have the one at the Padres stadium, but come on.
But who goes to see a Padres game? For real. Come on, guys.
Get serious.
Come on. No one's seen a Padres game in forever. I'm not even sure the Padres still exist.
I don't even think they know. I think the Padres are the baseball team that went cornfield in the real world.
The Padres are basically a Truman Show now, where they just have little leaguers come out and play against them, and they don't know.
So yeah, maybe there's a used condom guy. But yeah,
they have that the whole thing where it's like, oh, they don't want you to eat cats, but you can eat a dog. And they're like, no, please, for the love of God. I think you've already made that joke on the season.
I'm sure they have. And then they just, you know, after that joke, they just spend some time ordering hot dogs with stupider and stupider ingredients.
Yeah.
Bring me a hot dog with a telephone on it. Ooh, I'd like a hot dog with a rolled up carpet atop. That kind of thing. And it just goes on. And of course, the gag is that he just consistently pulls out hot dogs with those sight gags on them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, does the thing where he comically hands a written bill to Willie Tanner, which is like, wait, how did he even get that?
Yeah, I'm like, this is a weird sight gag to do.
Yeah, and he hands him the unfolding bill, and he does the boggle eyes at it. Oh, boy.
I can't believe you've ordered all these things, Alf. I was only gone for 5 minutes.
Yeah, but it's like, still, who... What kind of ballpark hot dog vendor writes out a written bill?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the same one that has a little hot dog thing that says hot dogs with anything on them so that you can have a stupid fucking sight gag.
Also, the guy who's working when there's no game playing and no one else in the stands.
Well, also that, yes.
I mean, what is happening?
This movie is straight bonkers McLoco.
So, anyway, they hang around with him for a while, and then we have our second showdown, which is right there in the stadium, and they just do it as sort of a, like a Scooby-Doo, people popping in and out of the ends of the aisles routine.
Yeah.
Because that way they can have the puppets run by underneath the seats. Yeah, behind the seats. And with Terry O'Quinn chasing after them, and the whole time not just realizing he could just step down one row from the middle if he wanted.
Yeah, this movie is really predicated on most people not realizing they can do things.
It's true. So, they eventually, God damn it, they manage to evade him again here with hot dogs and popcorn and stuff, which they do the thing where they throw the popcorn on the ground and then he runs over it and falls down like it was marbles.
Yeah, I don't know why, buttered popcorn, I guess, is super slippery.
It must be. It must be the slipperiest thing in the world. Could it just use ketchup or relish or something? Oh, wait, no, it's Chicago. Of course they can't use ketchup.
No, that would be just sacrilege. If ketchup existed in Chicago, apparently,
oh, they get
that
so
would
mad.
Be sacrilege.
Yeah, they can't put ketchup on their hot dogs. They need it for their shitty pizza.
Oh, beep, 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 beep. Shots fired.
Hot takes found here.
This is the home of the hot takes with Jigsaw and the Park.
Jigsaw and the Park?
Yeah.
Which one am I?
I don't know. Probably the Park.
Oh, okay. Are you Jigsaw as in the serial killer from the Saw movies?
No, no relation.
And then my Park is in Ray Park or just like a Park?
Yeah, you're Ray Parker Jr.
Ray Parker Jr. Session musician famous for Ghostbusters.
Yeah, we're always going to bring it back to Ghostbusters, apparently.
Sake. Oh, so they get away from him this time, and while this isn't the end of him in the movie, the only other scene with him is him having to humiliatingly admit defeat over a telephone to nobody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they get away, and eventually they convince fucking Mitch that he should get the hell out of here.
Yeah. They're like, well, Mitch, it was fun having you visit. And he's like, indeed, I've decided to stay. And they're like, no, you
actually can't.
You gotta go, buddy. Now, this is the thing that confuses the hell out of me. I don't remember, was Alf happy on Earth, or did he want to go home?
The weird thing is, he did seem to want to go home. Like, there were times where he tried to contact people.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, he never seems to be like, yeah, let me use your one-person ship instead of you, Mitch.
Yeah, or you know, scoot over and we'll squish in there together. I mean, we're just puppets. We'll both fit. Also, I'm indestructible. I can just hang on the outside of it.
Woo!
But no, there's literally no talk about that. He convinces Mitch to go home. Mitch goes home. Al's like, all right, we should also go home to San Fernando.
Yeah, the weird thing to me is, I mean, I get it. It's a one-seat UFO thing.
Yeah.
And like he couldn't get in there, but the fact that he didn't even go like, hey, when you get back, can you send someone for me? Like,
yeah, nothing. Just thanks for visiting. Come back again sometime. Also, the fact that he knows what planet Elf is on is bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that it was probably just some message that he sent or some shit.
This could easily be our fault for not remembering why the fuck Elf is on Earth in the actual show Elf.
It's true.
Maybe
it could also be
purpose.
Our fault for not paying attention to this fucking movie and having our phones out, but...
Well, I have my phone out for Harambe.
Phones out for Harambe.
That's not true at all. I have my phone out because I spent the entire time on our Discord.
And I spent the entire time playing a different Marvel app, because I've got like four of them on my phone now.
You're a Marvel crazy. Yep, You've got that Marvel craziness.
I'm a Marvel zombie.
No one's got a good alliteration for that Marvel crazy. There's no word that would work.
Yeah, I'm a Marvel Mississippi.
I've got that Marvel Marvelitis.
Yeah, I've got Marvel Marbles.
I've got Marvel Marmaduke.
I've got Marvel Duke. He's such a big dog. That dog doesn't belong here.
Oh, you know, if you put him in the Marvel universe, he'd be a big red dog, and he'd be the Devil Marmaduke. I'd watch that.
He'd be Clifford?
He'd be Clifford. He'd be Moon Girl and Clifford.
Yeah, Moon Girl and Clifford, now coming to you from Marvel.
None of these jokes are good or make any sense.
Yep, that's true. Still better than Alf.
I've got bad jokes in my brain because I watched the Alf movie. And then we get our Coda joke, which they're getting ready to leave Chicago. Willie Tanner gets one of his like five lines in the whole movie where he's like, all right, Alf, before we can go home, we have to pull over so I can put gas in the car. And Alf's like, you want gas in the car?
Yeah, and we get to end the fucking movie on a fart joke.
And a fart noise, which
yeah.
I just, you know, credits.
Yeah, good, great. Farts, disappointing look from Willie, credits. Fucking, wow, good job, guys, you did it. You finally did it.
I mean, we didn't get to everything here. The movie, you know, it's only about 90 minutes long, but there are a couple other moments where they visit Chicago landmarks and briefly remark on them while they're making their way around. But,
oh, well, there's a lot of boring shtick that takes place in, like, the hotel room and the car and whatnot.
Yeah, we're saving you a million extremely corny Alf jokes where he doesn't do anything, including a whole scene in the car that's basically a send-up of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles where he lip-syncs to some, like, doo-wop song for far too long.
Yeah. The amount of just lingering on jokes, I think, is, well, you know what? Let's get into the best and worst now that I'm talking about it. Jeff, why don't you give me the best thing in this movie?
I might have almost said that the best thing in the movie is his lip sync in the car scene because I fucking because I fucking love Run Around Sue. I mean, that's just, it's a good song.
Oh, yeah, it is.
So when he's just, he's a girl called Run Around Sue, hey, and I was like, yeah, I love this song. So I'm enjoying this. But no, I mean, the problem is this movie's got a couple of known people in it. It's got your Terry O'Quinn and your Seth Green, wasted. Terry O'Quinn does nothing in this movie.
Oh, no.
And David Ogden Steers is practically wasted in this movie, even though he's a main character and gets lots of stuff to say.
Oh, yeah, but it's not like he gets a lot of good chunky bits.
No.
I mean, not that this has a lot of good chunky bits. This is like the Campbell's chicken noodle of movies. Mm-hmm. There are no chunky bits here.
Yeah. You know, like a good pizza, this lacks too many soupy chunky bits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a
well-made pizza that's definitely not just an above-ground pool for rats.
Yeah, there's definitely like a good old-fashioned casserole with an edible rim.
Yep. It's just basically a bread bowl soup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chicago pizza sucks.
I love Chicago pizza so goddamn much.
Me too, completely.
The bit is good, but I fucking love deep dish.
I know. We have to come back around at the end. Now, you guys can keep your stupid hot dogs, but your pizza is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, get all that shit off of a hot dog.
What
all
are you
I
doing?
Want is ketchup.
How come you're...
All I want is American cheese and ranch dressing. That's all I want on my hot dog.
Wow.
Yeah, I was trying to think of how bad I could make that. Well,
I'm fine with chili dogs. Chili dogs work for me, and if I can't do that, then ketchup and chopped onion.
Then bacon and barbecue sauce.
Oh, well, that's the California thing. You get those street meat outside of a club in like Los Angeles, and it's a bacon wrapped dog with like jalapenos and onions and some sauce.
Yeah.
That is good shit.
Oh, yeah. You come out of a club drunk in L.A., and you get one of those, and you're like, you're a saint.
Yeah. Now, in San Diego, we don't go in for any kind of hot dog. Fuck that. We live where burritos are.
Yeah, we'll just get midnight burritos.
Yeah, if you're drunk in the middle of the night, you go to Cotijan or anything ending in Bertos.
Yeah, any given of the million different Bertos.
Yeah, and you get yourself a nice burrito, carne asada, California, whatever. That's our drunk food.
Oh, yeah.
If I got to eat a hot dog, it's because I'm having a cheap barbecue of my very own, and it's going to be ketchup and chopped onions.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So still, best thing for you.
It's the food, John. It's definitely the food. No, like I said, I think I'm actually going to go with it. My best thing is him singing the lip sync of Run Around Sue because I love that song. Otherwise, this movie was abysmally boring. What was your favorite thing?
I think my favorite thing in this was just the weird nostalgia of it. Because since I haven't watched any sort of Alf anything since I was, eight.
Mm-hmm.
So watching this, I was like, oh my God, everything is flooding back. Like, that's probably going to also be the worst thing for me, is then everything flooding back.
Sure, sure. Okay, fair enough. So it's a big old nostalgia trip, and you love that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, having Alf with his dumb Hawaiian shirt and just going, ha! Like, that's just so imprinted in my memory that it is a weird tickle moment for me in the brain, where I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, Alf, he's back.
In pog form. But I will say, actually, the worst part of this thing is wasting Seth Green, because goddamn it, Seth Green. I appreciate your dumb sight gag, but this was a waste of you.
I think Seth Green was mostly wasting for like the 80s. Like any movie he's in the 80s, except for like It. Or I don't know what.
Honestly, it's garbage. I mean,
it's way too long.
I fucking love the TV movie It. I don't care that it is garbage, but it is straight up shit.
Well, I mean, okay, here's the thing. Here's the thing. The definitive thing about that movie is that the movie itself is way too long and not all that great, but you cannot sell short Tim Curry's work as Pennywise the Clown.
Oh, yeah. Tim Curry makes that movie work. If Tim Curry wasn't there, then it would actually be bad.
And Seth Green is quite good as Rutchie.
Yeah, as Rutchie Tidger, the guy who was like, boop, boop.
That's what he said. He said,
to people,
that was his
boop,
his catch
boop, Rutchie.
Boop, boop, Rutchie, he'd say. And
he'd say to himself, he'd say.
And I forget who played him as an adult, but he did the same thing then. Wasn't it like Harry Anderson?
Yeah, Harry Anderson playing Rutchie Tidger. Boop, boop, me, he would say. Boop, boop, me.
I've switched from prop comedy to being a crappy magician. Harry Anderson. Boop, boop, Rutchie. Pick a card, any card.
Is this your card? Boop, boop, Rutchie.
That's him. So, but yeah, his work, Tim Curry as Pennywise is never going to die. He's so good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people are going to say forever that he's better than Bill Skarsgård in the new one.
But it's honestly, it's just different.
It's very,
very different.
Different
takes on the same character.
Skarsgård had some work that he was able to do that is phenomenal. Like, that creepy face that he was pulling all the time is a real face he can do.
Oh, yeah.
The pulling his lip in and, he does that so well.
Yeah, no, he went for a much more, like, menacing version, whereas Pennywise was like, with Tim Curry, he just loved the fact that he was murdering. Like, he could not love this more. It's one of those, you know, you love what you do, you never work a day in your life, and that's Tim Curry's Pennywise.
But if you're Bill Skarsgård, then it's you dispiritedly dance.
Yeah. You just dead-eyed, straight into the camera, dance.
Man, remember when that fucking shit was a meme?
I do, and I fucking loved it.
Oh, that was a good meme.
Anyway.
My worst thing. I'll take the other one. I'm a big fan of Terry O'Quinn, and he does nothing in this movie. He has like four scenes, and all of them are just him going, I'll catch that elf.
Oh, yeah. He's just an angry sort of, like I said, sort like a angry Mulder, and he doesn't really do much.
No, and I don't even think... I cannot, except for the chasing back and forth across the aisle scene in the Wrigley Field. I don't think there's a single scene of him sharing a shot with Alf or Mitch. Huh. In fact, I don't think he is very rarely in camera with anyone else. I feel like this might have been a lonely experience for poor Terry O'Quinn. I'm picturing him crying like that shot of Ian McKellen on the set of The Hobbit. I'm so empty. How can you act in these conditions? I just wanted to meet the puppet, but Paul Fusco hides it between takes.
Excellent.
That's actually a true story, by the way.
Paul Fusco hides it between takes?
That's real, because apparently when they did the... there's an episode of 30 Rock that actually has Alf in it, and apparently the conditions of getting Alf on set was no other actor can see the puppet when it's not in use. And so they had a trap door built into the stage where Alf appeared from, and after they called cut, the puppet zipped underground, and they left.
Wow. That is nuts.
It's in like one of Tina Fey's biographies. There's a story about how she said the hardest part about getting the... Because the scene is like the 75th NBC anniversary or something.
Yeah.
And she said the hardest part out of all of it was the elf part because working with Paul Fusco was weird. I'd say my least favorite thing is the waste of Terry O'Quinn. So we're just taking the two good actors on this and saying the waste of them.
Yeah. All right. So now we're going to give it a rating 0 to 5. Gives it our rating out of 10. Jeff?
I'm going to say a 2.
All right.
I mean, it's not... It's boring, but...
Oh, it's very TV movie boring.
But it's a nostalgia trip, and it's such a weird little offshoot that like they introduce a character that is never seen again and
never mentioned again.
Even when they flesh out Elf's family, he's just gone.
Yeah. It was just sort of a bygone thought that they had where they're like, let's do this, and then never cared about it.
Yeah. It was bizarre, but a 2 is just indicating that, you know, it's probably, you know, I don't think it's ever going to show up on TV again, but if you find a way to watch it, watch it.
Yeah. So,
also, I got hiccups. I apologize.
Yeah, that's good. It's good for the podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to leave that for John to edit.
Good, thanks.
John, it happened at 1 hour 12.
Thanks.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to go ahead and give it a 1.5. It was real boring. Fucking these TV movies, every time we get a TV movie to watch, I'm always like, man, this is so much filler. Like the whole, whatever that day after tomorrow thing,
yeah,
where it was like, establishing shots for an hour of this two-hour movie.
Remember when we were excited about that because it had John Lithgow in it?
Oh, yeah.
And we were like, oh, dude, John Lithgow.
No,
he's in the movie for 7 minutes.
In the same way that Terry O'Quinn could not save this, John Lithgow could not save that.
Yeah. No, it's... You get that guest star, and then you just invariably waste them.
Yeah, it is just awful. I cannot stand TV movies outside of The It.
The It. Would you say The It is the best TV movie ever made?
Oh, yeah. The It is definitely the best TV movie ever made with, of course, my favorite character, Eddie Spaghetti.
Boop Boop Rutchie. That's his name in the show. Boop Boop Rutchie Tuthers. Or Touchers. Rutchie Touchers.
Rutchie Touchers. Jesus fuck. Okay, I think we're done here. That's a 3.5 out of 10. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've gotten this far... Then thank you so much. You can support us on Patreon. We are patreon.com/systemmastery. it helps us do what we do, like come up with bullshit movies that don't actually exist. Here's where I explain the joke.
Are we actually announcing that at the end of this one?
Yeah. Hey, guys.
Is this just to stop people from sending us letters like they do about Duckman still?
Yes. This is coming out on April 1st. Jesus Christ, when you listen to this later, do not try and find this movie and ask us where we found it. It doesn't exist. We've been improvising for an hour. That's the joke. Please support us on Patreon so we can continue to not watch movies and review them anyway.
So if you're wondering why we didn't watch Sherlock Gnomes, we probably still will. We just didn't want to, and it's April Fool's.
Yeah, it's April Fool's, and that's my excuse to not watch a movie with Johnny Depp, so fuck him.
We're still going to have to. I mean, that's the rules, John. We got to go watch that.
Them's the rules.
Them's the breaks, son.
So, yeah, and of course, you can listen to all our other stuff. Just go to our website, SystemMasteryPodcast.com. You have the Movie Mastery stuff there, as well as System Mastery and Expounded Universe, where we do the Star Wars novels.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find us on Gmail at System Mastery, and then, of course, Facebook, Twitter, all that. We are System Mastery on all of the social medias. Get a hold of us there if you have a suggestion to go on the list of a movie we might actually watch. You can go to our subreddit, r/System Mastery, and the big list is down there.
Yep, it's called The Big List.
It is The Big List.
So go find it and put movies that exist on it.
Yep, so thank you so much for listening to our dumb bullshit goof-em-up, and we will see you in a couple weeks with more Movie Mastery.
But real,
actual movies.